Hello, everyone. This is Glenda, and I am so happy to be here. And I also want to thank and introduce a special new host for the board. Well, he's not new, because he's married to our beloved Nancy. And I think he's most of the time on the call. But he hasn't been speaking up much, probably because he's just blown away by all the good things we're saying. Anyway, Gary, speak up and say hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, great. So,
I know. Well, anyway, just say hi to everybody. I introduced them, and they know that you're going to be wonderful. And now we have another host whenever we need help or Nancy needs a break. So, okay. Well, I also want to apologize for all the technical problems that we had last week. It was Mother's Day, and in the spirit of blessing and goodwill, we just basically said, Nancy, take care of your family. Let them take care of you. But what I didn't realize is that since the last time I managed the board, it has changed. And so I kept doing the things that used to work, and guess what? They didn't work. So there were blank sessions that couldn't be recorded, and lots of, like, inter-community explanations that didn't need to be given to posterity. So we just didn't post what came through last week, and I want to bring some of it back to life today, because it was very, very important information, and I want to bring in some new things, too. Gary, is there anything you would like to say before we get started?
I would just like to say that this has been a blessing for me so much throughout the years. And Glenda, thank you so much. I'm just glad to be here.
Good. Well, we're glad to have you. And, you know, we are, I know you're going to add something special from your perspective. And I'm going to bring in a very important piece of updated scientific knowledge that would not be updated had a new perspective had not been taken. I think it's a really, really important concept for this complicated and conflicting world that we're in. Sometimes we can find peace by just taking another perspective on the same subject. And it doesn't mean that peace is all we can deal with. You know, I want to give credit to all of our ancestors going back thousands and thousands of years, what they had to go through to bring us, the great, 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 great grandchildren, into the prosperity and advantages that we have today in the world. But they were brave. They confronted everything. And I don't think there's ever been or ever will be any condition that can be resolved peaceably or productively or exceptionally well without first looking it straight in the eye. Looking, sometimes we associate confronting with a prelude to conflict, and it's not. Confronting could be trying to find out why the weeds are growing in your yard and the grass is not. So you just have to look at it, study it, come to a new conclusion, implement new ideas. How do you think that our great ancestors discovered some of the plants we now eat on usually a weekly, if not daily basis? Simple thing is a tomato. Thousands of years ago, tomatoes were all deadly. They were part of what we call the nightshade family now, which includes eggplants and a few others that are in that family. But they wanted to eat those tomatoes. They were tasty. They liked them, but they didn't want to die from eating them. So they figured out how to cultivate them genetically. Now, I'm not talking about GMO. Frankenstellar science, just ordinary genetics of, well, pollination and getting the right species to pollinate with the right other species. And it took a long history of study and development to get us to where we've got that nice red juicy tomato that doesn't kill us. I know some people have trouble digesting it. Some may still not be perfect, but we came an awful long way because people studied it. And I think that any situation that seems to be unnecessarily complicated and conflicting is a situation that needs a little bit more understanding. So we're gonna talk about something that I think it'll blow you. I really do. I think it will blow you away when you get a closer look at that. And I think we'll start with that, and then we'll conclude today with the most important life-changing concepts we touched last week in our Mother's Day presentation that didn't get posted. Okay, so what I'm going to share with you is oh dear, I lost it. Okay, found again. Almost lost, but found. Now, it has to do with the adamantine particles. All of you who've read Love Without End at least once would have come across this subject. And for those of you who are new to our discussion and the book Love Without End, Jesus Speaks, well, the adamantine particles were the particle he called the fundamental particle of creation, and that it was more elusive, more difficult to isolate, and yet it was the foundation particle of all existence in this universe. And he called it adamantine because adamant means you don't argue with it. There isn't anything you need to discuss beyond your understanding of how these particles work. And so physicists knew that they had not reached the fundamental particle yet. You know, they had come to some tiny, tiny particles that had great potential and great performance capacity. But the problem with all the particles they had discovered is that they were not self-generating, which meant they couldn't have been at the beginning. See, all the particles we know about are created by colliding with other particles or fusing with other particles, coordinating with them, distilling something. In other words, all the particles that we had discovered up until before the book and Yeshua's message came to me from advanced nuclear science. Well, they were all what you might call social particles, in that they survived and supported each other through their interactivity. And their interactivity is what produced the energy that configurations of larger particles would form to and be created from. So there was a point at which you couldn't go beyond the fact that one particle depends on another and is cofactored with another, and that's how everything accumulated and evolved into the larger masses that we observe as the building blocks of our universe. Well, there was a particle in that category, but the physicists didn't know much about it. What they did know is that it was a neutral particle that could attach to any other particle without affecting it, attach to it, conglomerate with similar particles without necessarily changing anything. It seemed to be kind of a messenger particle, but it was this neutral particle that they didn't know much about and they couldn't study any more about without creating a new particle collider. I'll tell you in just a minute what that particle collider is, but I want to get to the highlight of this part of my presentation, and that is they called it a neutrino. Now, those of you who read Scientific American or stay abreast of the latest in particle physics, I'm sure you've heard about neutrinos before. They were considered one of the, if not the smallest particle. But the thing about the neutrinos is that they wouldn't last long. They would appear and vanish. But one thing about them is that they appeared in their own right, in their own regard. They didn't appear because another configuration produced them. They would just appear out of nowhere, maybe join with another particle, but not necessarily change it. And then they would conglomerate and create a larger connection of these particles. Well, with a change of perspective in studying the neutrino, here's what they learned, and it's absolutely amazing. So they weren't able to observe it any better, but they were able to postulate it better. Okay, I want to make sure I'm being clear about it. I want to go back and clarify this device that has been used to study tiny particles. It's called the Large Hadron Collider, and it beams protons, which are members of a class of particle called hadrons. That's how that Hadron Collider got its name, in opposite directions around a 27 km ring until all of these particles reach almost the speed of light. So they accelerate these protons and accelerate till they're just almost at the speed of light, and then they manage to divide them into parts that they're going to have collide with each other. That's why this machine is called a collider. And needless to say, this machine is huge and very, very costly. And there's only one of them in the world at this time, and it's the machine that has been used to detect and isolate all the smaller particles that make up our universe. And here's how it happens. After they get these protons to collide, the effect is that collision, going by Einstein's E equals mc squared, that collision would either produce mass or it would simply destroy the protons, and they would have nowhere to, they would just vanish. So what would be left would be the tiny amount of mass that could be produced at that particular velocity of these particles colliding into each other. So they would study the mass, and through that, they have been able to isolate and describe all of the tiny, the muons, and go down the list. It's a salad bar of little tiny particles they've been able to isolate and describe. And they found what substances need what particles to be combined in order to emerge. But all of these particles that have been produced in the collider are the result of collision, okay? Which means they can't be observed on their own, and they have no cohesion or evolution in their own right. So they hadn't come to the tiniest particle yet. So one of the scientists, or actually it was a group working together, so I can't give you names right now, but he decided, let's postulate something. Let's think about this. What would the characteristics have to be for the tiniest particle in all of creation to have resulted in a universe that actually functions as a unit, all parts coordinated, all parts functioning? What would that tiniest particle have to look like? In other words, the alpha and the omega of creation. What? How could we possibly describe that? And so they took a look at what is the common organizational design of everything in the omega sphere of massive creation, whether we're talking about a galaxy or whether we're talking about a daisy in the field. What is the manner of organization? And uniformly, they all came up with spiral, a spiral. And so then they postulated, all right, can we possibly be able to isolate and examine a particle that has a spiral configuration? Well, they did. And that muon that they thought was useless was the spiral they had been looking for. It's like a little turbine that has a spiraling configuration, which is why it could not be located as a unique particle, because it's this little spiral that's like, kind of like the tiniest, the tiniest little spiral you could imagine at the heart of creation. But instead of one that is absorbing entropy, it's one that's generating energy. Now, they don't have a picture of it. They've got evidence of it performing this way. That's as close as they can get without creating another collider. But I think they would be foolish to examine another collider, because this is a particle that would vanish if it collided with anything. It's here to create everything. And it seems to be the perfect link between quantum and quantifiable space, because it comes from nothing. At its center is only a vortex. And yet it creates everything in material existence. So, my friend, I mean, I am so excited that we're at the age of understanding this. You know, we've been speaking about the wonderful potential connection and production that can occur by transiting from quantum space, which is, it's not nothing, it's actually everything. But it's not measurable by weight and location, and its time is qualifiable, not quantifiable, and it can appear in sequential presentations that seem to be moving forward, backwards, sideways. In other words, it has no prescription of limitation anywhere. And now we're at the point where we can envision how that works and how we can utilize it, how we can extract more potential from the quantum and even see it functioning as a powerful matrix of life for our body and obviously our soul, which has its birth in quantum space. But I just found this so exciting, but also I want to indicate, so that you don't miss this part that I mentioned, is that the discovery all came about with a change of perspective. Instead of looking for the tiniest particle that can collide with another tiny particle, the whole perspective was changed. If we're looking for a particle that could have created the whole universe and all of its diversity, then what would that have to look like? What a change in perspective. What if we could make that massive change of perspective in everything and then utilize what we discover on the other side of that perspective? We could probably walk on water also. We could probably purify the ocean water. We could probably end the wasteful consumption of material substance and renovate all of this horrible waste we're piling up on such a beautiful world. We could use creation for creation of more instead of trying to refurbish and rehabilitate things that no longer work. We would have a whole new perspective if we could just make that change. Now, I can't give you any more information about this neutrino that probably needs to be renamed, but it still does function in the way they discovered it, of what happens to it if it's reduced into just a material particle that can collide or cohere with another material particle. That suggests that we need to change our whole modality for accepting it because if these particles could create the whole universe, we're looking in the wrong place for amplified power in life. Wrong place, my friends. And now I'm going to use that to transition into a couple of points that I made last week, and I tied them together with Mother's Day, but they don't have to be, because the power exists in the subject itself. And that is the fundamental difference between belief and faith. A lot of people don't think there's any difference at all. It's just a matter of words and focus and what a person thinks about it. You know, a lot of people have just dismissed faith because they think, oh, that's just religious mumbo-jumbo. It's just mystical stuff. And actually, a lot of writers and seminar producers and teachers made a fortune on this idea that we need to be focused on belief. Yeah, that's what's going to carry us to the next frontier. Well, I think that's a little bit like trying to find the smallest particle through a collider. Okay, I'm going to tell you how to get to the other part of this dialogue, faith, that can get you what you want. And we're first of all going to impact, pardon me, I just need to take a little break here. Okay, I'm back. Water break. Beliefs are incredibly powerful because it's how you, as a whole person, you as an individual, you as a self-defining entity, like you are John or Mary, and you have a particular orientation in life, and you have beliefs, and you have talents, and you want to apply those talents, and you have to believe in yourself that you can do it. You have to believe that things are going to work out for you, and that if you get organized and you have a plan, and my friends, it works. But it only works so far. Have you noticed? You get your beliefs all lined up, all organized. It gets you started. It propels you into a good place in a developing situation. It gives you coordination points for working with other people. And then sometimes it just flops. It just didn't work. Okay, back to the drawing board. We'll drop a new set of beliefs. And sometimes we will have the stroke of wisdom to ask another really important question. Well, why didn't it work? We tend to avoid the negative. We don't like to go there. But my late husband, Larry, who was a very prominent psychologist and teacher in the New Age world and moving into the what I would call free-form Christianity, where it wasn't about ceremonies or protocols, but it was about finding God in yourself, finding God in life, that sort of thing. But he had a special process that worked miracles for people. And I think it's worth mentioning here because it was not only valid, it was based on very, very true substance that a PhD psychologist would have had to confront in doing his work. And that is that most of our beliefs are actually negative. We grow up as a kid being told by others, well, you know, rich people can do that. You can't do that. We can't afford to get you that bicycle. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, you're right-handed. Don't try to write with your left hand. We get all kinds of beliefs that are based upon restriction. And actually, even with benevolent motive from our parents or our teachers, they don't want to see us fail. So they'll point out our limitations to us to keep us from going in that direction. And we grow up thinking, no, I can't go in that direction. I don't want to fail. I don't have enough funds to support what I'm going to do. Well, I'd like to remind you that the founders of the 20th century dynamics, Edison, Ford, all started with nothing. I'd like to remind you that the whole aerodynamics industry that propels our world on all levels today started with two guys who had nothing but a dream. The creator of Apple phone started with nothing but a garage and a workshop. So no, don't enroll in your restrictions. Don't. But it is important for you to connect with the fact that you may have a few. You need to connect with them and blow them away. So it is important to know that Larry would actually go so far as to say 70% of your beliefs are what you can't, about what you can't do. And they're there as defense mechanisms. They think to keep you from failing. But Yeshua would say, by your faith, you can do anything. So what's the difference between faith and belief? Okay, I've already acknowledged the fact that beliefs can get you three quarters down the road, and maybe every now and then all the way, if you can disperse and get rid of your negative beliefs or things that would stop you. But before you get to the end of the road, you're probably going to be faced with a dark night of the soul, like, can I really do this? And that's going to throw you into this other realm that's called faith. So what is the fundamental difference? Okay. The fundamental difference is that belief is directed toward the material universe, even though some component of it asks you, do you have confidence in yourself? But that confidence, and you have to say yes or no, of course, but that confidence is oriented toward an accomplishment, a specific or general accomplishment. Can we do this with what we've got? Well, in making the transition for discovering what may be the real adamantine particle from particles that can only be discovered in a collider machine. Okay. Somebody or a group of people in conference had to come up with an idea. Can we postulate? In other words, it was not directed toward discovering in the material world, can we postulate what a particle would have to be like that was able to create the whole universe? That was a change back into what do we look for within our scope of intelligence, awareness, comprehension, respect. How about that? It's a different drive that caused that shift of perspective to take place. Now, faith is looking from the inside into infinite potential. faith begins with you. Not prescribed on a plan. Not put together on a proposal for funding. Not put together on a cause and effect observation study. Faith held within infinite potential, being available to attract, being available to receive. It's all about receiving instead of doing. And in that receiving, we take on a very different orientation to life, a very different perspective, one of gratitude, because you cannot face infinite potential without being infinitely grateful for what you already have, for what already exists in potential for you, which you are open to receive. Before every miracle that Yeshua ever performed, he pronounced gratitude before it. He didn't say thank you after it happened. That would be expressing appreciation for something that was brought forth in material form, like saying thank you for a check in the mail, thank you for a raise of salary, thank you for something, thank you for the food, thank you for your hospitality. We give thanks, but we're giving thanks so much on the after the fact schedule or process of events. Something good happens and you may be thanking God for it, but you're thanking God for what you already received. Yeshua thanked God for what had not yet been given. And then, because the receiver caught on and the miracle happened, Yeshua would say to the receiver, by your faith, you were made whole. So in other words, gratitude, receiving, entering the world of infinite possibility is the Alpha and the Omega of faith and the true definition of faith. For my example on this, I'm going to turn to the realm of romance. And love and romance. I'd noticed when I was looking through books I might want to read at some time in the future, how many of them were focused upon this almost unending quest to find our soulmate. And I thought, and I've read descriptions of these books, and I thought, no wonder it's a prolonged mystery. That's what the first thing that came to my mind, because we're trying to find our soulmate in the world. That's not how you go about something that's that important, that perfect for connecting and living together. It doesn't seem right. And so I kind of mapped it out in my mind. Like I actually did a preview of one of those books, and so they were giving people a chart of what would you want to find in your soulmate. And you made a list of priorities of what you would want to discover, what you would want to find. And there never was a list about what you would like to give I didn't find one. What would you like to give to your soul? I think that skipped in the other side of the universe. But what occurred to me is that a soulmate is not somebody you go out to find. You don't go onto dating sites and list your ideal values and virtues in someone of an orientation that you would like to partner with through life. No. Well, sure, a lot of successful marriages have actually come from these dating sites, but they're marriages of partnership and companionship. Okay, let's just leave it at that. But to find your soulmate, you're not going to go there. That's like trying to find the smallest particle in a Hadron Collider. You're not going to find something of that value and importance in a realm where everything is judging everything else in comparison to something else. It's not going to work. And so I thought, all right, well, so what would we do? And, I mean, it was so clear to me when I turned into faith. I turned into faith, and I just literally said the words that were necessary. And the words that were necessary for me were, I know you're there. I feel you. Thank you for your presence. No matter how many miles are between us, no matter how many years are between us, or even planets between us, thank you for being who you are to me. And I just pray that the best happens for you. And I know that we will be together when the timing provides. And then I would just be in a state of receivership and attraction. And I wouldn't go looking for anything because there's nothing to look for. By definition, a soulmate is already connecting with you in some way. And creating allowance for that is the most beautiful way you could say, welcome home. Somebody here loves you. Nothing to look for. Yeah, I hope this was an appropriate example because we like things that we relate to. We like things that touch our heart. And, you know, it could be the same looking for new friends. Yeah, let's say you move to a new town and, actually, I went through this, but I'm fine with it now. But some people asking for directions in life and how do I make more friends? Well, the first thing I would say is, well, try getting out of the house. Just find a place where you're among people that you feel comfortable with and just be there. Be a peaceful, friendly, interactor, voice of, smiles and good cheer and be open to what happens. Be open to whoever comes up to you to say hello and don't turn away just because that person doesn't look the way you want them to look. You never know. What really matters to the heart is what touches the heart. What really ignites the fires of your heart is what causes you to be in the heart at your very best self. And a good question to ask about, is a friend really a friend? And who is my best friend? Just ask yourself, who brings out the best in me? It's a simple question. Who brings out the best of me? That's someone who is touching your heart, even if You don't see them that often, even if right now you're not doing a group activity with them. Someone who brings out the best in you is someone you want to know better. In other words, let's change the perspective. In other words, and let me put it in a different state of judgment, when we make a list of what we want in a friend or what we want in a life partner, when we make a list of that, it's its own kind of judgment, because you're basically saying, I don't want something else. This is what I want. That is a passive, non-aggressive judgment. And judgments don't attract anything. It's like trying to find the basic particle in a collider. I hope you like the way I put these two fields of intelligence together, because actually, our whole universe is unified that way. And I think that you will find your best friend, your best community, your best area of activity by opening yourself up to receiving and being in either a community, a group, or some form of relationship where you employ the idea of what comes round goes round. Okay, what moves the daisy? A spiral. What moves the galaxy? A spiral. What creates the winds in spring? Spiral. Yeah. And they all, that, these winds in spring, actually, they start in the ocean, usually El Nino or, what's the other one? Oh, well, I'll think of it when I'm not trying to think of it. but I just want you to be in a flow of your life and let that flow focus around what brings out the best in you. And the best in you could be anything from a smile to performance. Anything from acceptance and peace to being the one who gives answers and not problems. The one who loves being the voice of resolution and not the voice of criticism. Just take note of anything that brings out the best in you, and you're on the right track. Okay, Gary, we're going to turn the board over to you now.
Wow. Well, what do you know about that? I really enjoyed that, Glenda. You know, throughout the years, I'm always looking for the little jewels you drop on how to really live life better. And you constantly deliver. Today was just wonderful. I really appreciate it.
It was a bomb today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we needed that. And we need more pathways to freedom and cooperation, creation. And we're going to do that because we were created to do that. I think we've just been spinning in the wrong direction because it benefited those who controlled the world.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's what all the conflict is around, my friend. Those who control the world want to maintain their control of the world. End of subject. Well, what if a greater force started spinning everything in a different direction? Big question, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, do we have people on the board wanting to comment or let's see.
Well, I think that everybody is really pleased with what you said today, and I'm not seeing anyone on the board right now.
Well, that, you know, that always happens after a presentation that blows people's minds. It's like, well, I got to figure this out first. I don't even know what to ask right now. So you can come back to it next week, everybody. And that actually gives us more time to prep for our blessing. You know, we've been running out of time lately with big subjects that just got us carried into so many issues in life. And today I feel really, really at peace with this one. And I guess everybody else does too. So we're just going to close that. We're going to put this in. We're going to mute everybody, which means, Gary, if Nancy didn't show you how, you will have to unmute yourself so you can talk, okay?
Okay.
But I'm going to... Okay. When we go into that function, I'm unmuted, but you'll have to unmute yourself, Gary, so that you and I can talk. Okay. I want to just take a... Let's start with just a deep breath. That's overdue. We need to just sit back wherever you are, easy chair, sofa. Just take a deep breath right now. Feel your body relax. And just fold into a state of peace and happiness. We're going to flow some more peace and happiness through you. And this is how we begin. We're just going to let the spin go in that direction. We're going to blow. We're going to take more breaths and blow them out. And now I want you to take an extremely deep breath and full breath into your lungs. Feel your diaphragm expanding, your rib cage expanding. Hold it for a couple of seconds. And then slowly, slowly breathe out. Your brain actually monitors breath like that and sees the breath like that as a trigger for healing. That is the way you breathe when you're in the deepest level of sleep. When you're in this zone of complete surrender, that's where your body heals. And you will take really, really deep breaths, hold them, and then release them slowly because your body is your brain and what other higher capacities you have reviewing your physical needs. Make observations from those slow breaths because those slow breaths are kind of like kind of like an energetic portrait of your body, sort of like an MRI. And it is decoded, and your body looks for places that it needs to address and heal. So there's an interesting thing about that that has been studied in recent breathing and brain exams, and that is this slow breath in and slow breath out are triggers to deeper healing. So let's try that again. A really slow, very, very deep breath in. Expanding your ribs, extending your diaphragm. And we're going to add one more thing. Relaxing your shoulders. Just let your shoulders fall upon this really full diaphragm. And then slowly release the breath. That's it. Okay. Okay. Now we're going to take a deep breath upwards to fill your sinus cavities. Okay. And that can be a fast one, a deep one, fast. You can hold it for a few seconds, and then you're going to blow it out of your mouth. Just blow that one out, because it helps to open the passage that might have become blocked, primarily because you're not using it other than for shallow breathing. We tend to do our shallow breathing through the nose, and we don't take it all the way up to our sinuses. And then we just sit in this shallow breathing mode, sometimes for hours, reading or, on the internet or, talking to people. And we do this shallow breath this way. And then we wonder, why do I have sinus blockages? Well, you're not bringing enough oxygen into your sinus area to activate your antibodies. In other words, your lymphatic system, your white blood cells, all of the parts of your system that have germ-fighting potential, curative potential, and you need to stimulate. See, when you take a deep breath, what you do is you stimulate the tissue. It doesn't matter if it's the external tissue. That's all you would want to stimulate. You don't want to cause abrasion. But it brings more blood up to your sinuses, and thereby it brings more oxygen and more of all of the antibodies that could fight infection. And you stay clean. At first, doing this may cause you to sneeze, because you'll be breathing deeply along sensitive tissue. But that will go away, and your sneezing will eventually stop, and a lot of your coughing will stop. So let's just continue doing that for a minute, because we want you to be, you're filled with oxygen. And also relax, because we want you to be in a receiving state of mind, a receiving posture. Okay. Now, we're going to get some movement going. Now that we've gotten some oxygen enriched body parts, we're going to move a little bit. And since we want everyone to be part of this, I know some of you are not mobile for standing and moving with your legs, which is okay. But let's just start with our arms. We're going to start another way. We're going to lean, just sit up straight, and then lean forward with your back, so that you actually stretch your back. Okay? Lean forward as far as you can over your knees. Okay? And then reach down with your arms, almost like you were going to touch the ground. Like you used to be able to do standing up, but now you can do sitting down. It's really important to have your body, other than your feet, touch the ground. Because the ground does literally grounding of the energy going through your body. Okay, and now see how much more flexible your arms are? I want you to reach up. So now you're going to reach up first with one. Up, make a fist, okay, so that you tense the muscles of the arm. And now extend your hand like you're giving life to creation. Bring that arm down. I want you to extend the other one up with a fist like you're bringing energy of the earth up. Now extend your hand like you're giving it to the universe. All right. Now, let's move our shoulders so that one is forward, one is pulled back, the other is forward, and the other pulled back. Lean your head into whichever direction you're pulling so that you're stretching your neck. Let's do it again, and then lean your head into it so that you stretch your neck. All right. Now, those of you who can stand, please do. Hold on to something if you need to. And just be mindful of your posture. Try to be as steady, as straight as you can, as balanced as you can. Hold to something if you need to preserve your balance. So what you're going to do is you're going to step forward just a little bit and you're going to lean into that step so that you stretch the leg. By leaning into it, you stretch the front and the back so you don't have to go through this twice. Okay? Now stretch the other one and lean into it. Okay. That's right. Now feel how good that is just to get those muscles out of a contraction state into a yielding state. See, when we are in a defense mode, we tighten up. We don't want you to be in a defense mode receiving your blessing. Sometimes we are, even with people we trust. Let's just say we go to have some counseling about a particular subject or stressful thing to a counselor. And we know that counselor has our goodness at heart, but we're concerned if he or she might say something that's a trigger point. And we're ready to say, oh no, we don't try that. We've tried that. It doesn't work. I mean, most of the time in the counseling sessions I have had with people through the years, they walk in the door with all of the flexibility of a board, a 2x4. And I just ask you, is it any wonder they're not getting along, they're not solving their problems? 2 2x4s walked in the door. Okay, first thing you got to do is get them out of the defense by directing their attention toward things they actually would like, things they would love to do together, things they would like to achieve. What makes you feel like the best person, and so forth and so forth? You got to get them out of the defensive mode. They're not going to accept anything. So that's really why we do the stretching and the bending and the breathing. But also, and very importantly, is everything you're going to receive is pure energy. It's a very high velocity energy. And it's going to give to you by imprinting upon your body, your mind, your heart, your soul, that which you need. That which you want. So the next time you go inside yourself in a state of faith and gratitude, you will activate that blessing. You're the one that's going to activate it. And you're going to activate it by the faith you have in yourself the faith you have in God, the faith you have in the basic goodness of other people, the faith you may have in the incredibly harmonic creation of nature. You're going to trigger it, and you're going to trigger it by your faith. And that triggering will help to activate your perception of union with God, which may come in the form of gratitude, may come in the form of I'm sorry. And that I'm sorry could be a lot of things. I'm sorry I tried to do this all by myself and not bringing it to you to help me. I'm sorry that I come to you only when I can't do something all by myself, which for all of us should be every time. We're not going to be able to do it. Have you ever noticed, I'm going to intercept right here, have you ever noticed you can never do anything by yourself? You'll wind up, even the laundry, let's say the machine you're going to use, it doesn't work. And you got to ask somebody, does anybody know if there's a vacant machine here? We are built to be social. This is why Yeshua said to love your neighbor as yourself. Your neighbor will help you. And the other commandment is love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Well, how are you going to do that if you don't make a connection? And if you don't know all the particulars to be grateful for, just express your gratitude. For heaven's sake, it's so easy. But what keeps you from doing it? What keeps you from doing it are your defenses. Well, yeah, but I really wanted to do this myself. I mean, everybody said I couldn't do it, and I want to show them I can do it. Okay. Put that 2x4 back in the barn and get it out of the right side of your being. Okay. You're not going to do it by yourself. But you got to find people that you love doing life with. There's a great quote from, I think it was Steve Jobs, founder of the whole Apple empire. He said, do what you love, and you always will love your work. Do what you do as duty, and you will always feel a slave. Well, sometimes we have to do things as duty because we got to pay the bill and we haven't figured out how to get the job or the work we love. But acknowledge it and apply ample amounts of gratitude every day for the fact that you live, you breathe, and you can still walk and be a free person. And you'd be surprised how you start attracting everything else to yourself. See, this is the part of attraction. So much teaching went around this subject 20, 30 years ago. The laws of attraction, the 7 laws of attraction. Well, there are no 7 or 10 or 2,000 laws of attraction. Attraction is just faith. It's faith. It's simple. Being available. Stating your desires. Receiving the love of God. Receiving the infinite availability of the universe to connect with you and bring you everything you need and want. And again, we get back to gratitude, which defeats our defenses. Gratitude will defeat all of your defenses, and especially if you're grateful before you go in to ask your boss for a raise. You give thanks to God for being with you, in you, and coming through you to reveal exactly what you need to understand about your future with this company. It will change your perspective. And your change of perspective is probably what will get you the raise. I won't bore you with any more repetitions of miracles I have had in my health and substance of living, because you're probably bored with it by now. And I try to keep you alive and awake if I can, but they all were prefaced by a change of perspective. And there's no more powerful change of perspective than to be grateful for something you haven't received yet. That one thing can change the whole spin. One thing. And then one thing repeated again and again and again until your whole life is functioning that way. All right. Well, so now I want you to be seated, your feet on the ground, your head, the crown of your head, directed up. So don't get too comfortable in that recliner, because the top of your head is going to be pointing out horizontally. And don't be lying down for this part of it. I want you seated. I want you, the crown of your head coming from an area that can flood you with the rarest and the most precious particles of creation that actually come from and beyond the earth. And then I want your feet on the ground to receive, accept, and ground these energies. Okay? So that's how you're going to, that's how you will receive your blessing. And I want you to be praying during the receiving of the blessing so that you attract all of the energy that is intended for you. The energy that will be flowing your way and around you and globally is kind of like a television station sending out everything for one subscription to Netflix. But you only have asked for one. You don't want everything flowing into your TV. You can't handle it. Okay? It would literally break your Wi-Fi connection. You want what you want. And you have a right to ask for what you want. Ask for it. Be specific. God wants you to be happy and successful. And don't be timid. If you need to ask for a particular new job, a particular health issue, a particular partnership issue, ask. And ask in the best way you prayerfully know how to ask. Don't be a stranger to God. He didn't leave you. We all got immersed in this world. And this world is not a very kind place. It just isn't. Okay, I'm going to offer my prayer to Yeshua, and then you will follow with yours. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me now? Yeshua, dear one, beloved, Son of God, Lord of life, we thank you for showering us with knowledge we needed to have. We thank you for showering us with community and others in our world that are there to be extensions of our conjoined world, that we may bring goodness to one another, that we may bring to each other answers that we need, joy that we need, smiles that cheer us on, and help that helps to relieve the hard work that life can sometimes impose upon us, or the discouragement we can get from the world. Thank you for showing us how to find the place of peace that relieves the discouragement and carries us up to the mansions, the higher mansions that have been created to receive us in our life and beyond. We thank you for our friends. We thank you for our family, our neighbors, and those we have been given to share life with. We thank you for the peace that we can enjoy now. And thank you for teaching us how to sustain the peace, that we may pass peace on to our children and grandchildren as that which we live to cultivate. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. We have learned the hard way that we are rejoined with our Creator automatically when we find that place of peace within. And thank you for teaching us to look for that wisdom and that place. We ask that you would be with those who don't know how to find peace now, who don't know that there is another way. We thank you for those who are first responders to an area of trouble, that they give their life and their peace to saving the lives of others. We ask you to be with the children, that the peace and the joy they know in their life may become a contagious field of bountiful blessings to everyone that is lucky enough, graced enough to have a beautiful new life in their life. Now we surrender into your love. We surrender our life into receiving what we are blessed to receive. And we ask all of this in your holy name, in your eternal presence with us, the bridge that connects us when we forget that we can be the bridge through love and gratitude. Amen. Blessing givers, let us begin our conduction of this energy of the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, I want you to rest horizontally on your bed, on a sofa, on the floor, on a mat, on the yard, wherever it works for you to be horizontal, at peace, not thinking, don't even pray. For you are in a completely peaceful receiving mode. Be there at least 7 minutes. Could be longer. And you could fall asleep. That's okay. Just do not think. Be empty. Be an empty vessel. Receiving water that has now been made into wine. Bye-bye for now. And I look forward to being with you next week and weeks after that. It's always free. It's always here for you. Get as much as you need. Strengthen your faith. Come again. So, bye-bye for now.